Well, we'll get started here. Andy is a director of an organization at Santa Clara University in California, organization called the Miller Center, where it's the entrepreneurial center for nonprofit organizations. And they spend a lot of time and effort and energy coaching nonprofits. Santa Clara University, by the way, is also the home of the MOBI project, which Pepe has been using, the My Own Business Institute, and has incorporated that into their curriculum. And the program, I don't know if I mentioned or not, Andy, that program is all translated into Khmer as well as in English.
Yeah, you mentioned that. It's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's way cool. So Santa Clara University is now our double good friend, because not only do we get the benefits of MOBI, but we will learn more about the coaching and the accelerator programs that the Miller Center offers. And I can think of several of you that I want to talk about pursuing this once I get there in Cambodia. So Andy, without further ado, I'll turn this over to you.
So yeah, it's really a pleasure. Thanks so much, Bill, for the invitation. As you may have told folks through your other connections at Santa Clara University and your visit there, we met through a mutual friend and colleague. And I'm really look forward to learning more or you know, about the work you all do and seeing how we could possibly collaborate. I think personally, I've never actually been to Cambodia. I've been to a lot of the neighboring countries, I guess Thailand. I spent a couple trips to Myanmar. You can see actually, I don't know if it's showing up in my background, the from Bagan in Myanmar when I was there visiting some enterprises. But so I also understand, you know, a lot of the challenging conditions that you work in. And I think this field of social entrepreneurship and the types of work Miller Center does could be helpful, and even some of the ideas I'm going to share. So basically what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about Miller Center and how we see social entrepreneurship, what that means to us, and how we help social enterprises scale up and serve more people. And then I can talk more specifically about some of our programs and all, but I do definitely want to make this interactive. So if you have questions, feel free to put them into the chat or raise your hand, and we can make it a conversation too. It's as I go through this. Here we go. Okay. So Miller Center for Social Entrepreneurship is part of Santa Clara University, and we're a center that's designed to be a link, a bridge between Santa Clara University and the rest of the world, especially communities working in development. So our mission is to accelerate entrepreneurship, to end global poverty, and protect the planet. And this comes from, again, Santa Clara University is a Jesuit Catholic university. And so there's a lot of values around global social justice, experiential learning for the students, practical action, those kinds of things. And it also comes from being in Silicon Valley, which is the tech capital of the world. Many of the graduates of our university go on to work for all the companies, you know, Facebook, Google, Apple. Those are the big employers of our graduates. But we also, it's important to give back, and it's important to take the principles that have made those companies scale. There are so many things that have allowed the tech companies to scale and reach more and more people, reach the whole world practically. How can we apply those same principles of entrepreneurship, of business growth, of fast growth, to solving social problems? That's really our focus. And we do that all over the world, especially really across the Global South. We've worked with over 1,300 social enterprises-like organizations see the surprised face. It's still only a drop in the bucket compared to how big some of the problems are that you all are addressing in your communities. But we've worked with 1,300 social enterprises in probably 100 different countries all over Southeast Asia, India, many countries in Africa, Latin America. And as you can see there, the companies collectively have had a huge impact, over 100 million lives impacted, additional lives impacted 3 years after going through our program, combining all the companies. And as you can see, they raise on average $750,000 of new investment after our program to grow their work. So we're very happy to be able to reach a lot of companies. Before I go any further, what I want to do is take a couple of minutes to talk about how we at Miller Center think about social enterprise. It's a term that has a lot of different meanings to different people. And I know from what Bill told me about the type of work you all do, and just hearing it in the intros, a lot of you are working on things like education and more on the nonprofit side. I'd like to explain a bit about how social enterprise fits in with this. So if we look at this continuum on the left, on the far left, we've got, you know, one extreme. We've got the philanthropic NGO like the Red Cross that's run totally by grants, donations, and is great for sort of humanitarian aid. If there's an emergency, a natural disaster, a crisis, they take people in and feed them and house them and clothe them. And there's no expectation that people pay for that. It's a crisis. So that's pure philanthropy, very important. You've got the other extreme at the for-profit side. You've got the traditional businesses that are just all about maximizing profit and maximizing the return to the shareholders. The people who invest in these large corporations, they want returns back. So the business has to maximize profits, go into the markets, make money, give it back to the investors. But in between, there are a lot of different other kinds of flavors. And the area that we see as social enterprise is really pretty broad. So I think starting with what I understand from Bill, many of your organizations are probably on that left kind of entrepreneurial NGO. So you are a nonprofit organization, which of course means you can't take profits and for your own personal gain or the gains of your board members, but you can be entrepreneurial and generate revenue to help the donations go further. So that's definitely one end of it. There are also social enterprises that we work with that are for-profit companies, but they're for-profit companies that have what we call the double bottom line, where they have a social mission, they measure their impact, and that impact, that social impact is very important, but they're also looking at for a financial return. And there are some advantages there, because if you are generating a profit, then you can get more investment and probably grow more quickly and grow larger. So that model is very valid. And there's even those three boxes, they're different varieties. But in general, I guess the main point I want to make is when we talk about social enterprise, it doesn't have to be a nonprofit. It can be nonprofit or for-profit. But the key thing is either way, you're using entrepreneurial principles to create greater and greater impact, reach more and more people, and do it in a financially sustainable and scalable way. Sound good? And Bill, too, feel free to chime in. Oh, I see let me pop up the chat window here.
No, I'll monitor the chat window for you.
Okay.
And I'll let you know if a question needs addressing while you're speaking.
Great, thanks. Okay. So, getting into a little bit about how Miller Center works. We see in that center or leaf there, the scalable and replicable social enterprises and the local leaders, so people like yourselves, you're the people driving the change, you're the people doing the amazing heroic work out there in the world. And our journey is to support your growth So we believe, I'm sure most of you, all of you are familiar with the Sustainable Development Goals. We see our role in where social enterprise can have maybe the biggest impact are on those goals there, the gender equality, clean water, clean energy, livelihoods, economic growth. Those are some of the areas where social enterprise can make the biggest global impact, we believe, through women's economic empowerment and climate resilience, which I'll talk about a little more. So moving towards those, we work at Miller Center. We have a curriculum, a training curriculum, similar to MOBI, but different, which I'll talk about more on that. We have mentorships, so people who have been successful in business who can support entrepreneurs as they grow. And we engage students and faculty, and we have partner investors who can help. But it's all about helping leaders like you grow your impact and reach more people. So we focus in, as I mentioned, in two areas: women's economic empowerment, for reasons again that I'm sure you're all familiar with. There are a lot of good reasons to put extra effort and extra resources into supporting women leaders, but also impact organizations that have female staff or female customers or value chains. So this is women's economic empowerment in the broadest sense. There's not any one right model. It depends on the location, the issue you're working on. One good example of women's economic empowerment that we're working in is actually, I was trying to use examples from your general region. In Thailand, there's a company called Yellow Leaf Hammocks, and I'm going to switch over to their website. So this was actually founded by two Americans, but what they do is they work with the Northern Thai communities, the artisans there, to make these hammocks. And then they sell them directly in the United States. But as you can see here, it even says when you buy one of their hammocks, it gives you the name of the artisan. And because they're selling directly to the consumers here and very high-end quality products at a very high price, then they're able to pass a much larger share of the profits to the artisans themselves. So because because they're selling basically direct, they're the only middleman between the people making the hammocks and the end customer in the US, they're able to pay much better. So they've got a lot of great stories here about how the money for making these hammocks is able to help lift the families up. And this company, I'm not sure I know Bill would know this TV show Shark Tank. They actually were on Shark Tank in the US and got a sizable investment. I forget which one of the sharks invested in them, but so that's helped them grow. So they're very, this is a for-profit company, but very focused on the social impact and something they measure. And when we work with a company like this, we help them, make sure that they're actually measuring their social impact and that they can prove it to their investors and to their team that this isn't just exploiting the people, it's actually benefiting them. So that's one type of organization we work with. I'll send the slides afterwards, Bill, and if the links here to them, if anybody's interested. Then the other big area that we work in is what we call climate resilience. So as you all know, there are a lot of challenges around climate change, and the people living in poverty or poorer communities are always going to be the most vulnerable and hit the hardest by climate change. So we see, again, many needs, the needs that our programs and that social entrepreneurship can help tremendously with are clean energy. So as you know, there are many places where the electric grid doesn't reach. And there are also solutions like solar lanterns, solar home systems that can be sold in profitably so that the people selling them can make a fair profit, but that also save the people money from buying candles or kerosene lamps and things. Same thing with water. I have a water example. Clean water is, of course, a super important problem to solve for health and safety and money reasons, and agriculture. We work with a lot of agriculture companies also, that as climate changes, I don't know how it's going in Cambodia, but in many parts of the world, as climate's changing, the crops people can grow are also having to change. And so the companies that are trying to use that as an opportunity to say, oh, as climate's changing, here's a new crop you can grow, and here's a way that the actual farmers, the marginalized farmers, can make more money. There are a lot of cool models there too we can talk about. So I'll give a couple examples there before we go any further. One would be, this is from Indonesia, Nazava water filters. What they've done is created some low-cost water filters. You can see there they look just kind of like plastic jugs, but they actually have a water filter in them. So that instead of boiling your water, you can just use these filters. And so they've created, again, they're a for-profit company, but they have, they're selling these all over Indonesia. They have a network of sales agent, and they've actually started expanding to some other countries. So this is a way that they're able to sell them at a low cost and convince people that it's a better solution than boiling the water. So that's one of the companies. Another one that we worked with in Myanmar, that the trips I was doing to Myanmar, was with a group called Smart Power Myanmar. So they're setting up, Smart Power Myanmar works with organizations that set up these mini grids. So you can see here this Techno Hill Engineering. This is not at the home level. This would be at the village level. They set up what's called a mini grid, and then run cabling around the village to the different households. So this is a larger venture, but again, if a mini grid site can serve between 1,200 and 2,000 people, then just having a few of those makes a big difference. And so our role was working with several of these companies from different parts of Myanmar to be able to grow their businesses and serve more villages. So let me talk a little bit about growing the business. So this is, you know, we're here in Silicon Valley. We're very used to what they call the hockey stick, just kind of ramping up the growth. So you've all seen how, again, the companies Google, YouTube, Facebook, they start kind of small, they figure something out, and then they just try to grow and grow and grow and grow. So how do we do the same thing for a social impact organization? We believe, try to use my mouse here, hopefully I won't mess up the slides. So it's all about sustainable growth and scalability. And by growth, we're talking about growing the organization to grow, especially the impact. So we start, the foundation of everything has really got to be around your impact. If you're building your organization in a way that the organization grows, but the impact doesn't, you know, that's the opposite of what we want. What we want is the impact to grow as fast as possible. And all these other pieces are based around how do we make the impact grow. So part of this is what are really how do you measure your success, and understanding very clearly how you track and measure your success, the impact you're creating, and then building a business model around this. So the business model is basically, how much does it cost you to provide that impact, and where does the money come from? I heard in the introductions that many of you are doing things with schools or education programs. So I'm guessing that many of the students pay, probably not the full cost, but they pay something. So that's a revenue, that's an income. And then you're, I'm guessing in many of your cases, subsidizing that through grants and donations, because if you charge the full price, the families that you want to help probably couldn't pay it. So that's a perfectly valid model. The question is, you know, how much does that scale? So to scale that, you need more students who can pay, you need more donations. So understanding that and developing your growth strategy so those two things can grow together is how you grow a social enterprise. There are other models. If you're working in education, we've seen models where the business model could be you have a school that charges a premium price. If you're in a city in Phnom Penh or something where there are people who can pay good money for top services, you could do that and then use those profits to subsidize. So some students who can afford less pay less, the students who can afford to pay more. That's a different business model, but it still can help you create the impact. So you have to have some kind of business model. Of course, marketing and sales, we use a lot of business terms, but it's really all about, again, you might think of this as customer outreach or stakeholder outreach or things like that. It's the same idea. How do you reach people? How do you convince them to trust in your organization, to sign up for your programs or classes or services? And how do you do it cost effectively? Because, there's a lot of times we want to do things the best way, which is maybe visiting each household or something like that. But are there more cost-effective ways to do it and more scalable ways? A lot of times we see a lot of smaller organizations that are doing things use a lot of personal relationships, which is great when you're starting out. But again, how does that scale beyond your community? If you're trying to go to a broader region, you probably need to strategies that go beyond personal relationships. So we taking these principles to what you're already doing and helping to think, is what you're doing now working? Does it scale up? If not, how can you grow the organization in a way that can keep scaling and scaling to reach more and more people? Because I'm sure all of you started your organizations or work for your organizations because you're trying to make the biggest impact you can. And so to do all these things, though, it does take money, and we work with entrepreneurs on a fundraising strategy and plan. In our case, the entrepreneurs we're working with, it's typically, we work with them, the ones that are going beyond grants. So grants are great, especially when you're getting started, when you're trying to reach very difficult populations. Donations, grants, philanthropy are a necessary part of that. But often you can grow further if you can combine that philanthropic capital with maybe other types of capital. In some cases, that can be debt, like loans, if you're trying to, if you have a way to pay it back. In some cases, in like the examples I was giving of for-profit businesses, you could even take equity, which is where you sell part of your business to investors and then get capital to grow the business. So we help the entrepreneurs that we work with think about how all these things fit together, because obviously that it all has to fit together to have a plan. So that's the general model. And then just to start to, I'll kind of wrap up a few things about how we work, and then we can open it up for discussion. But when you're thinking about growing your organization, I'm sure you all have planning processes. You probably have strategic plans and annual plans and budgets and things like that. What we talk about here, in some ways it's different, in some ways it's not different. The business plan, the financial model is really, it's forward looking, but again, it's just thinking about it a little differently, because it's thinking about it in both in terms of kind of revenue and expenses and all. I think what I've seen, so I used to live in Central America in a country called Guatemala, and when I was doing work down there in the nonprofit sector, you tend to create the budget of here's how much money we think we're going to have and here's how we're going to spend it. That's kind of the budgeting and execution process. The difference in the kind of business planning we do is more around how can we, over the course of the year, grow the revenues, the income, the money coming in, and how can we invest it? So it's less about spending money and more thinking about income, expenses, revenues, profits, and investments. And so these modeling tools that we use help us model that and find the optimal strategy for growing the organization. So in our programs, and you know, we have programs at Miller Center, but there are also lots of programs all over, including I'm sure in Cambodia and other parts of Southeast Asia, that will do something similar. Because again, in the entrepreneurial mindset, it's really about just trying to grow. Generally about trying to grow in a sustainable and scalable way, and leveraging the capital, any money you have coming in, making it go as far as possible. So yeah, just to kind of wrap up here, we tend to work with organizations for us that are already up and running, have impact, have money coming in, have a clear demand, and are looking to grow. So they have revenues and are starting to grow. That's kind of our sweet spot. If the ones that are still ideating and testing and kind of finding their model, that's probably too early for us. And if the ones that are already well established would be a little too advanced. Oops, sorry, backwards. So just to sort of explain the types of the levels of company we would work with, for our programs, we look for companies that have typically $50,000 per year of revenue, and that would not be from grants. At least most of that would be from earned revenue, so from your students paying you or from customers buying your products or something like that. A staff of at least three people up and running for a year, and as you can see, focusing. It could be for-profit, nonprofit, or hybrid, but with I know most of your organizations are nonprofit. Again, we want to focus. We're best set up to help the ones that have an earned revenue stream already. So those are somewhat. There's some flexibility there. We can talk more if you're interested and don't quite meet some of those requirements. But that's generally how we're set up to help the most. So let's see, what else is I going to say? Yeah, when we work with an enterprise, so we're a fairly small group. We're about 20 people in our center. To work with all the entrepreneurs we do, we use 300 plus executive mentors. So these are mostly Silicon Valley business executives who have had very successful careers in business and are donating their time to help people like you all grow your organizations. I mean, I think people like Bill, but except Bill's already, he's so engaged that he's there with you and spending his own time directly, but people who maybe aren't his, aren't as, what would be the word, as amazing as Bill to kind of go and start an organization and spend all the time he does with you, but who still want to give back, but at a smaller scale. Those are the kinds of mentors we have who can work with the entrepreneurs typically via an online platform in Zoom. So we have content, we have curriculum, we have an online platform, and we work you through all of the business plan. So just to kind of give some context, of some of the organizations we work with these are some of the groups that fund us for projects, corporations like Chevron or USAID give us funding, GE, and then we work with a lot of local partners around the world. So I think that was basically what I wanted to share at a high level. I'm happy to open it up for a discussion and see what questions you all have.
Well, Andy, let me pitch in first because that's very informative and nicely prepared. Thank you for all the effort of putting us together and nicely prepared, nicely presented. One of the organizations that I work with, they're not in the room tonight, is Friends International from headquartered in Phnom Penh. And I already have it in mind that, and after listening to your conversation here, your presentation, even more in my mind, I want to get you connected with Sebastian Moreau there. They have a large budget. They're up in the $7 million annual operating budget each year. And they're currently earning about 65% of that budget themselves. And they earn it through restaurants, which are also training centers for the people they're serving, and gift shops, which are an outlet for the artisans in the community and surrounding areas, and teaching some skills as well for the people who are operating that. So I think that's going to be a natural and a suitable fit, and we'll pursue that.
Great.
Most of the people here in the room are not operating a business. Now I can, Salin, for example, earns something approaching 20% of his budget by selling local crafts around the community. And I know several others of them in the room are doing that. But most of the people here are operating on grants, fundraising from donors, however they can scrape together enough money to continue their operations. They're highly service motivated. Our Southeast Asia Foundation has funded social enterprises to support organizations like those who are in the room here. One example, and one of the few examples in Cambodia, is back pre-COVID, when the world looked a little different than it does now, we worked with Tammy and Makara at ABCs and Rice, and we invested in a 50% ownership in a pizza restaurant in Siem Reap. And it did produce a little money, and then everything went to hell in a handbasket, as you know. In Myanmar, where you've also worked, our foundation has had some of our best successes. And we didn't sponsor the entrepreneurs per se, just to create the social business. But we created the social business so that the revenue stream could support the school, support what the organization is doing. An example of that was a monk running a boarding school for 240 high school kids, boys and girls. And with a rice harvesting machine that we acquired for him, he was able to earn $40 an acre, and he would do 800 or 900 acres in a season, harvesting rice. And that profit all went back into supporting the expenses of his school and paying for the teachers and even more teachers, so the class sizes got smaller. And that was pretty successful. But you got me thinking, when you showed the picture of that little mini power system that was in Myanmar.
Myanmar, yeah, but there are companies doing similar things in Cambodia. There's now I'm blanking on the name of it. It'll come to me. There's one we worked with in Cambodia.
I'll frame the question to you here. With all that background, but in Myanmar, we had a monk who was also running a boarding school, and those monastery schools are the equivalent of government schools in Myanmar, as you know. And this guy wanted to build a water system for the village where his school was operating, his monastery and school was operating. And we funded that, something in the neighborhood of $30,000. But we funded the log pipe to bring the water a couple of kilometers from the river and then into a big holding basin and then to the plumbing down to some smaller tanks down the hill and eventually out to the village recipients, the families in the village who could pay $2 or $3 a month for water, for one tap of water at their house, which is pretty important because they went dry 4 months of the year and all the wells. So then I got looking at your power grid and thought, well, there's an opportunity for somebody to do some electrification in some of these remote villages where there is no electricity. And wondered if you would ever sponsor these kinds of startup projects or what other things that you've seen happen.
Yeah. Well, actually, so I guess there's a couple of things there. One is there are actually solar water pumps now that so it's a smaller, it has its own, I'm not sure how big the solar panels are, but they're pumps that could be even moved from field to field that are powered by solar panels. So you can use that for things like irrigation or moving around. So there are a lot of technologies out there. I guess what I would say is we really don't sponsor or help like startups. Like I was saying, we mm-hmm. work with companies that are already a little more up and running. But that said, we know a lot of companies and a lot of the enterprises we work with are probably looking to expand, you know, could be if there's a good business case to take the kind of work the companies that we're working with in maybe other countries, and they would probably love to have a partner in Cambodia who could take their technology and take their model and get it going in Cambodia. So that those kinds of connections we could definitely look at. So like in this example of the solar water pumps, the company that's really leading the way in that is based in Nepal. You know, we could see if that's a good fit. Yeah, there are a lot of models out there, yeah. Like the one with the water filters.
As a point of clarification, mm-hmm. I am, and I'm speaking for myself and for our foundation and what we fund, I am not particularly interested in funding an entrepreneur so they can make money in starting a business, unless there's a strong social service element of that business. Like the example I did with the rice machine and with the water system for these two different monks running their monastery schools. The proceeds made the school much more sustainable, much more successful, and they were focused there. That's a fairly pure model in terms of pure social enterprise for social good. We get investors, they may want some return. We'd be looking at some kind of sharing or some kind of partnership like we did with ABC's and Rice's pizza business. But what I'm hearing from you is they need to be beyond the startup phase, and then you're ready to work with them.
Well, like I said, our formal programming, yes, for mm-hmm. the programs that we run ourselves, yes, we're not really set up to help people, you know, kind of ideate in the early what we call product market fit, that kind of work. That's better done locally.
Well, that's all right, because in this room, and there's 21 of us right now, we've got, and I'll get to you momentarily, Rith, we've got some really smart people. I'm proud of these people. I'm proud to call them my friends and my partners, and we couldn't possibly achieve our mission without them. So you probably sparked a lot of thinking and a lot of ideas, because this is consistent with what we talk about when we talk about financial sustainability. Is we know there's only three fundamental ways you can get the money: is you can get somebody to give it to you, a donor, a foundation, a grant. Somehow you can get people to give you the money, or you can get the community to support your work, or you can earn it. And so you're causing us to think about ways that we can earn it. And I'm sure you're sparking some ideas. And Rith, you've had your hand up over there. Why don't you take over?
Yes, thank you, Bill. Hi, Andy. I'm Rith. I'm running an organization in Bannerbong. So we've been working a lot in education, and also I think in the last 3 to 5 years, we concentrate a lot trying to bring some of our program turn into like a social enterprise. So like, for example, within our school, currently, we actually register as a business, but I still quite not familiar with the word social business or social enterprise. So we call it sometimes social business or social enterprise. But we generate almost 60 to 70% to cover our operation. So we did quite well, but because of COVID, it turned back a lot. And the other thing is we recently started a cafe and a farmer market in Baltimore. But we started with a lot of grant support from our Rotary friends in Australia and some partner. But my question is, because you mentioned you're looking at more, probably they got stable in revenue and business operate up to a year. And what sort of support would you provide? So it's mainly mentorship or also trying to pitch for investor or something like that?
Yeah. So first of all, congratulations on, it sounds like you've got some really good progress there, and to earn that kind of percentage, I think you said 65 or 70%, that's really good for a social enterprise. So yeah, we basically provide mentorship. We're starting to look at some investment funds, but it's mostly mentorship. And in some cases, we can guide you towards some sources of investment. Mostly, there are some opportunities for debt funding, so like loans, but low interest rate loans with favorable conditions. Sometimes it's where the repayment is not tied to your revenue. So if your revenue, for example, is low certain months because of the seasons or your business, then you pay back less those months. So there are some things like that, but we help you prepare the business plan so that you can go speak to those kinds of investors, and we can kind of point you towards them, but we don't get too involved in the actual investment piece ourselves. Yeah.
And one more thing just with that, because with this cafe and the farmer market that we're setting up, because it's brandly, we're trying to do as a social enterprise. And we're working on a model is some sort of what we call investment loan. It's very new. It's very new to us. So yeah. We're talking with one of our partner about investing the fund, but the interest, it will go back to support our project. So because it's in the startup period, is it something that you might be able to help or?
Help. So you're taking the loan or you're giving the loan or
taking But like, we working, this is very new. So one of the partner, they working on a model. They give the loan for 5 years. Uh-huh. They take very low interest. They will not take the interest. So the interest, it will go back to support our education program. So, but because it's something very new to us. So we really looking for some sort of the support in that sort of area.
Yeah. How big is the loan, if I can ask? Like how much?
We're looking at between 50 to about 80. That's what we're talking about.
50 to 80.
$1,000 US.
$1,000 US. Okay, that's a good size. Yeah, that's a lot. So I guess, taking a loan, the important thing is even with those favorable conditions, you want to be sure that you're going to be able to pay that money back, that it helps you grow your business, not become a pressure. Our help would be around looking at your business plan and making sure that you have the right strategy and kind of projections in place so that that loan is something that you can not only pay back, but use it to really grow your business so that maybe in the future you can either don't need more loans or you can take a bigger loan to grow even more. That's the type of thing we would be able to help with. Again, it would be kind of the mentorship, okay, business plan.
That's what I was thinking as you were talking, Andy, is that's true mentorship. If you get somebody who has built a business or two or three and has coached others through that process, that could be the kind of coaching that would really benefit Rith. And as he said, this is all new to him, but to some of those Silicon Valley business people that are on your mentoring staff, it's perhaps quite old hat to them. They've been there, done that.
Exactly, because one of the things that happens, Riff, is as you each new stage of your business, it's even though it's the same business, when you suddenly get this new money and you start a new part of it, there's like a whole new set of challenges. You're dealing with more people, or you need new procedures. So there are a whole lot of things you have to learn. And then you get that figured out, and then the business grows more, and you have to figure out a whole bunch of new things. So that's where, like, to Bill's point, are people who have been with companies and grown with the companies can help you sort of think about, it's not just about the money, it's about building a business that scales. And I think there is just a lot of, it's hard. I mean, that's why I really salute all of you. I know running organizations, socially focused organizations, it's a huge accomplishment to be where you are.
It is. And, I would just validate what you said. It's a real challenge. And these people are doing marvelous work under very challenging circumstances, and many of them are right in Siem Reap, which is where Angkor Wat is, and it's a tourist center, but it's also one of the poorest provinces in Cambodia, and they're doing some marvelous work, and that's why we keep having these meetings, and that's why we keep looking for fresh ideas and welcome people like you to give us some new things to think about how we could be more effective.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, I'll send you the slides in case you want to share them with folks. My email contacts there. All of you feel free to reach out to me. There's things our program can formally do to help, but there are also, I do have a pretty big network. I've been doing this work for a long time, so I might have other suggestions or.
Well, you can send the slides to me, and I'll make sure they get to Sopal, and Sopal coordinates with all of the organizations, some of whom were not here for the this morning's presentation, but it's recorded, and within a couple of days, it'll be posted on our website. And then, so Paul sends out the link to all of that from everybody. We'll include you in the link.
Great.
So you can look back and see how your presentation went.
Yeah.
But before we bring it to any kind of a close yet, and we usually allocate an hour or a little longer for the first portion of our conversation in these monthly meetings, and then we turn to discussions about celebrations and accomplishments and things that are going on that's wonderful, and we also talk about challenges and where we need some help. But Rith has stepped right up and raised a couple of good questions and asked some with some specific needs, but want to give some others in the room a chance to raise their hand, speak out. Who else has questions for Andy? My goodness, you must have overwhelmed them, Andy.
Hi, Bill. Hi, everyone.
Hello, Kantia.
Yes. Miss you guys a lot. I just come back again for this month, but I miss so many parts of the presentation, and I will be looking forward to reading the slide that you share. But just a quick question, you know, again, like Bill mentioned, most of us here are running nonprofit organizations, so it's really a little bit a different topic from the business or social enterprise and things like that. But we have some, you know, we also willing to integrate some of the entrepreneurial concept or, you know, startup business idea, training and things like that for the youth. For example, like JVOC, we work with youth. And most of them also, you know, want to prepare for the future job or future business that they want to do. So we are not an expert on that. We can only, you know, look for external trainer or mentor who can provide this mentorship or training to our youth who want to do some kind of business, startup or, you know, social enterprise in the future. So from what you just mentioned, I've heard that you know also provide mentorship, but to those who already start up and something, is there any sources or mentor group or, you know, kind of basic document that you can share with us so that we also can share it to the student in case they want to learn more about this kind of business concept or social enterprising? And if possible, then, you know, I think it will be good that you have another service or something to support us as local organization by having this mentor, you know, and so that we can share with our students something like that.
That's a great question. And Andy, I bet I know where you're going with it.
Yeah, well, so I mean, one resource to start with would, of course, be the MOBI content, which is, you know, I think that's actually for getting started. That's actually really good content now that it's also been adapted to the local language and everything. I think that's even better. So I think that's a good starting point. I'm not sure in Cambodia what other types of mentoring programs are available. I'll have to do some more research and see if I can find anything. I'll let you know. But I think in the past we have done some trainings. We actually did a lot, some of our content. We did some workshops in we did it in Myanmar, we did it in Thailand, a few other Philippines, a few other places. But it takes mentorship can help, but a lot of it too is just being is just trying and starting, you know, seeing the opportunity and trying it out and kind of figuring it out as you go.
So, I remember at one point, 2 or 3 months ago, there was some talk about your getting together with Pepe and talking to Catherine about the MOBI program. Am I remembering that right?
We were talking about the collaboration by because they opened this entrepreneurial, you know, training things, mm-hmm. but then it did not work out with many of the students because of their schedule.
Okay, well, I think that would still be a really good step, that another conversation with Catherine and probably with Watt about their experience with the MOBI program. I know they're happy to share the translation and all the documents they've done. They've been working with it for what, year and a half now.
For some
time. I think that would be a good next step.
I think so too, and it because Pepe was new to Pepe as well in the first year. So I guess, you know, we can come back to talk about that more. And if you already mentioned that it's a one thing, then we can definitely go back to that. Also, one more thing that I want to share, if you don't mind, is that we had one of our NGO partner that supported JWalk as well, a small grant to JWalk. They also have this social enterprise grants available, but it's not for us, the organization, to apply. It's for our alumni student who finished the program and then started their business or social enterprise. So is there any something similar service to that where, you know, you don't, because again, we are nonprofit, but we have students who, you know, who got a scholarship and finished a scholarship program from us, and they are looking for mentor, looking for funding to, you know, start their business, something like that. Is there any package or a program like that?
Yeah, unfortunately, so we at Miller Center wouldn't be something we could help with. I was just remembering, I'm going to put a link here in the chat. But there are some organizations. So this is an article. There's a group, I think they're based in Singapore, called IIX. Impact. So there are some things out there. This is a little bit old, but I know they have other programs. Impact Investment Exchange Women's Livelihood Bond Series. They are making those kinds of investments. So that might be one. The one group to look at. And I think there are other things out there. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much.
One other thought for you, Kontia, is you're fortunate that you have Ariel on your staff, who's in the States right now and not here at the moment. But this guy's got some business experience. He's entrepreneurial, but now on your staff. So that might be the linkage for helping. Both connecting with Pepe and the MOBI program, and also for working with your students, your graduates, who want to start something up, and I'm personally interested in that. I'd like to keep track of what they're doing to also.
Yeah.
We can talk more about that when I get there in another week and a half.
Thank you so much, Ian.
Okay. Who else has a question for Andy or something they'd like to explore?
Yang Seng from CCDO. Thank you so much, Andy, for sharing about that. And I love the idea. But, you know, sometimes it's also challenging for us when we start to move the organization from the nonprofit to the profit. And I do have a challenge from board also, our board team, and they say that by law, like our organization is nonprofits, and we can move it to the profits. That is, you know, like contrast my law and the philosophy of the organization that we are doing in nonprofits one. So a little bit hard, but if I think if we are own organization, for example, like Mr. Jared, he's the founder of the organization. Maybe you can consider to transform the organization from the nonprofit to the profit. I think moving forward to sustainable. Recently, what I can do with my organization is try to make the project to be sustainable, develop the project to be sustainable through the government sector. Because we are working with the government once on all the project. We try to initiate, try to design it, make it sustainable in the government system. But the organization itself is still a nonprofit. We don't have any project to make income for that. So I just share my race to the team. So I think that everyone facing it. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for saying that. Those types of stories and situations we hear a lot, but I think there's some important things. So it's very challenging. You know, you have your board, your team, your supporters kind of all got behind. They came together with one vision. And if you're trying to change it, it can seem threatening, but I think the way a lot of organizations have overcome that is if you say we're going from being a nonprofit to a for-profit, then obviously is in conflict with your mission and maybe even your legal status. But it's not, you don't have to go to for-profit. What you can do is go to be, I think you use the word sustainable. If you don't think of it as we want profit, think of it as we want sustainability. And so to get sustainability, we're earning revenue. Having money come in isn't profit. If you sell something and money comes in, that's revenue, it's income. But it's only profit if you take the money out of the organization and put it in your pocket, you know? Then it's profit. But it can be, so when we say, so the social enterprise, you can still have revenue, you can have income, you can have money coming in, but it's not to make a profit. It's to make the organization sustainable or to increase your impact. So I think sometimes it's a hard distinction because people hear like, oh, we're going to sell this service. That's profit. That's capitalism. That's bad. That's against our charter. That's against the law. But that it doesn't have to be that way. So I think helping your board members and other people see that just because you're doing things to bring in money, that can it's not profit, it's sustainability, it's investing back into the organization. So I think it can be a hard conversation, but if you can start to help them see that it's actually strengthening your mission, not changing it, maybe you can get them behind you, and it'll help you. That's kind of my reaction, because we've heard this before.
Thanks, Zing. I'm really glad you brought that up. Thank you, because I'll be in Phnom Penh next week, and I'm going to meet with the folks at Friends International, where they must have faced this issue already. And I'll get a little smarter. I'll ask a few questions and take a few notes, and I'll be able to share that information with you when I get to Siem Reap. And also with anybody else as we continue to explore this whole notion of how we can build financial sustainability without running afoul of your government regulations about making profit. And from the parts I've heard over the past couple of years, there is a rub in there somewhere, Andy, and we just don't know enough about it yet. But I think if Sebastian has certainly worked his way through that, because he's certainly making so-called profit out of his gift shops and out of his restaurants, And I just want to know how he handles it financially, yeah, and how he does that with government relations.
Yeah. Again, I don't know anything about the laws in Cambodia, but in most countries, as long as the money is going back into the social mission of the organization, it's okay. It's just
it's not flying out into somebody's pocket.
So right. But
we'll explore that further. Yeah. Thank you, Ling Sing. It's an important point you bring up.
Yeah.
Who else before we
hear from iPhone JB?
Oh, yes. JB's got to go. Good. JB.
Yes, I was. I'm good, thanks. I was just going to drill on what you just said, because it's from what I heard, and it's the subject of what we're talking about, is that the social enterprise is not recognized by law in Cambodia. So I know some must have found a solution, such as France, because like you said, they did find some solutions to make it work. And I'm thinking particularly about the tax issue, that you know we have to answer to the tax every month. And it's one thing to convince your donor about and your board to make, you know, incomes and to reinvest it into your activities and so on. I don't think that that's our problem here. If any of us wants to set up a social enterprise or anything that generates revenues, I think as far as I am concerned for ADF, our main issue is to deal with the tax and to show that a social business is able to be set up in Cambodia, because from what I've heard, this is not an activity that we have been doing. But from what I've heard, it's the main issue that some of our partners, such as AgriSud International, which we work with in Kulen, they have been setting a kind of social enterprise called the Green Farmers, that I'm sure some of you knows, selling fruits and vegetables every weekend in front of the Royal Gardens in Siem Reap. They're having troubles to officialize these structures as a social enterprise, because apparently it doesn't exist by law in Cambodia. So, and therefore it's complicated to deal with the tax. This is just a remark basically.
Yep. No, you raise a good point, and I'm thinking about your joint venture with AgriSud and the work that you're doing with black ginger and some other products up on Kulin. This issue may be in your future before much longer.
Yes, I mean, the good thing is that it's mostly AgriSud to deal with that, and I deal with other issues, but it's been an ongoing issue, and I think they will have to face it even more soon, because they plan to set up a small marketplace in Kulen to sell their products, and therefore it's going to be completely run by this structure. So your presentation was quite interesting in terms of social businesses and revenues. But we do have a problem in Cambodia about this, as far as I know. And I'm happy to know that you will meet Sebastian in Phnom Penh, Bill, because he's certainly find a solution. I don't know how, but so maybe you can tell us about it after that.
Well, we'll certainly keep the issue alive and keep learning what we can learn and see what the possibilities are. And one last chance for questions before we give a proper thank you to Andy. Who else has a question or a comment at this point? Rith and Langsing and Kontia and JB, you've raised good points, good questions. Andy, you got us all thinking.
Great.
Me included. Yeah,
that was the goal of the session, right, Bill, was to kind of get you all thinking. And it's also really been good for me to, it's also got me thinking of how we could better, you know, support the innovators like yourselves, because as Bill said multiple times, I there's no doubt in my mind that you're all doing some very important and very impactful work. So, please stay in touch. And if there's ways we can think of how to support you, happy to explore that.
It's nice of you to acknowledge that, because you're talking to an awfully good group of people here, and these people in the room still at 21, including you and me. But there's a number of organizations that just aren't here this morning. And whenever we meet as a group and we talk about who we're serving and how many people, often the number is up in the range of 10,000. Lives are being touched by the people that are active in our CLLC group.
That's great.
And it's quite a good organization. Another one that I'm going to be visiting with in Phnom Penh is called She Enterprises, S-H-E Enterprises. S-H-E support, standing for Support Her Enterprise. And I'm going to talk to them. And now that I've heard more and more about the Miller Center and the kinds of coaching you can do, and we're going to make the introduction there and see if we can develop a fit.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Organization strictly focused on supporting women entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Wonderful. That would be right up our alley. So.
And Kontia knows one of their people really well. I'll get to see Keisha when I'm there next week.
Excellent.
Well, Andy, thank you very, very much for this very thought-provoking and informative presentation. We appreciate it greatly.